started.
All right, thanks. All right, welcome to City of Tukwila Finance and Governance Committee. My name is Zaki Down, I'm the chair. I have my colleagues, Councilmember Kathy Hogarty and Councilmember Delastrunas Johnson. We have two agenda items. First is 1A, 2021 second quarter financial report. Tony Cullerton, Deputy Finance Director, please go ahead.
Councilmember Flo, for the record, Tony Cullerton, Deputy Finance Director, and as stated, I will be giving the second quarter financial report. So this report is a little bit more extensive than our monthly report because we include both revenues and expenditures in this report. So as a reminder, the general fund ended 2020 with a $12.6 million unreserved fund balance, which exceeded the reserve policy by $1.1 million. And additionally, our contingency fund did meet its 10% commitment. So we are starting out the year in a good spot. So starting this year, we were aware that 2021 and 2022 were going to be challenging years to budget for. The expectation was that 2021 revenues would be lower than 2019 pre-pandemic. And so expenditures were budgeted accordingly. So good news, the general fund came in $1.4 million under budget. Revenues came in about $500,000 under budget also, but reported a $280,000 increase over 2020 for the same period 2020. So that is a slight increase over the same time last year. So I'm going to go into some of the details on our second quarter report. And so I'm going to jump in and dive in on page 6 to look at specific revenues here. And so starting with the retail sales tax. They came in about $300,000 under budget, but were $333,000 over 2020, so the same period. That is an increase of about 3.7%. So while under budget, they are trending in the right direction. Property tax came in over budget, as well as an increase over the prior year. Now, this chart on page 6 looks a little funny. It's due to, essentially, it's a timing issue. When the state took over sales tax, they are receiving and remitting revenues throughout the year to normalize revenues, where when we were managing it, we billed at the first of the year. And I backed up. I apologize. I was confusing that for business tax license. The property tax looks wonky because of a delay in receiving the revenue. So last year, people were given additional time to pay. So that's why that one is off. I apologize for that. Crazy looking chart, but due to a timing issue. Okay, on to page 7, utility tax. They are down slightly, but they are in line with 2020 revenues. Excuse me, in line with the 2019 revenues. Interfund taxes are slightly under budget by about $49,000, but they are higher than 2020, probably about $60,000. Moving to our gambling and admission taxes on page 8. Gambling taxes are down, and so are the admission taxes. Gambling taxes are below budget, a little over $416,000. But they are essentially the same as they were last year. So what we saw there were card rooms, casinos, had an opportunity to set up some tents outside to generate revenues. So we are trending along the same lines as last year. Admission taxes, we're talking about movie theaters and bowling alleys, which have been closed. There's just no opportunity for them. Currently, looking at real time, movie theaters are still down. They've started streaming movies online. And so those revenues are extremely challenged. Moving on to page 9, business license and revenues. So I talked a little bit about this a little while ago. So business license revenues The straight answer is they are down for the second quarter, but we believe this is due to a change in reporting. This is where the state has taken over business licensing and they remit revenues, collect revenues as well throughout the year, where we were doing this at the beginning of the year. And so we are keeping an eye on this, and we do note that a few of our larger employers renew their business licensing in third quarter in September. So we do expect this to be more in line with last year. The building permits are performing respectably. While they are down from 2019, they're higher than 2020, and they are also exceeding budget. Our charges for services is higher than 2020 and slightly below budget, with parks and rec fees, plan check, review fees taking the biggest hit. You know, TCC was closed for a significant period of time. We are talking about restoring those revenues, but the charges for services did take a hit there. And so to wrap up the revenues, I would like to share that the sales tax mitigation payments from the state have been reinstated, and we're expecting the first payment for 2021 to be received in third quarter. So some additional good news for revenues there. Now transitioning over to expenditures. As I started off, the general fund expenditures came in under budget about $1.4 million. And as we have been reporting throughout the year, all the departments have been operating below budget with the exception of fire. And as of June, they're coming in about $550,000 over budget. And it's my understanding at the Community Services and Safety Committee meeting, it was reported that fire is expecting to come in between $500,000 and $900,000 over budget. So a budget amendment is looming there. Now, while the other general fund departments are currently under budget, their budgets are tight, extremely tight, as we have been saying throughout the year. And so there's not much room for any surprises there. So we're watching the budgets closely and fingers crossed for the rest of the year. Just to wrap up some other fund information, you know, capital project funds, there was a, the design was completed for the West Valley Highway Long Acres project in second quarter. The annual overlay program is near completion and the 42nd Avenue Bridge replacement design has started. We do include some additional capital project information in the packet there. And I guess lastly, some other honorable mention items is public safety fund. Fire Station 52, as we know, opened in February. The city issued $2.8 million in debt for the public workshops, phase number one. And then we also participated in a bond refunding to save approximately $100,000 in some future debt service costs. So that completes our second quarter report, and we will take any questions.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate the report. Questions, comments? I'll go with Councilmember Delastinas-Johnson.
I don't have any questions, just happy to see that it looks like our budget revenues are tracking pretty well. So kudos to all of you who worked on this, are making the estimate.
Thank you. Councilmember Hogan.
Yeah, I have no questions. It looks like we're doing pretty good. So thank you. Yeah.
All right, I have no comments or questions. Thank you for the report, appreciate it. So I believe this is going to go back to the front page. It needs to be forwarded to 9:13 COW meeting. Is that okay with both of you? All right, so move that forward. The second item is 1B, continued discussion of the prioritization of the restoration of the service levels. Vicky. Vicky, when, I mean, we talked about this item a couple of times now. Some of us really know what's kind of going on. For the audience that is either going to review this recording the first time or folks that are in this meeting, can you go high level and then come back to where we were so we can pick up the conversation? And then any changes from last memo, if you can highlight as you're talking through the memo, that would be helpful to me. So appreciate it.
Sure. I'd be happy to. So Vicki Carlson, Finance Director for the record. So this is a continued discussion of American Rescue Plan Act funds that were passed by the federal government earlier this year. The city is slated to receive a total of $5.8 million. We received half of it in June, so a little over a month ago, and we are slated to receive the second half in June of next year. The funds need to be spent by the end of 2024. And there's four categories really that the funds can be spent under. The first one is responding to the pandemic in the negative economic impact. So that would be assistance to households, small businesses, nonprofits, et cetera. A provision in government services to the extent of revenue was reduced based on the pandemic. So there's funds available to restore programs and services, including frozen positions. That were reduced or eliminated due to the direct effects of the pandemic. And then specific investments in water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. So those are really the main categories that we can spend these funds under. We have been looking for a variety of avenues to use these funds, and we have proposed a number of projects to spend the full 5.7 memo on the bottom of page 58 of the packet is just a recommendation that will show how you can spend all of the funds, the $5.7 million, by the end of 2024. You can kind of break it up into three different buckets. One bucket is restoring programs that directly impacted our community. So restoring street services, parks programs, recreation programs. Another bucket would be restoring business assistance, so helping out small businesses that were impacted by the pandemic, utility and rental assistances for our residential communities that were impacted significantly, and then restoring some programs would be the third bucket that were directly reduced because of the pandemic. And again, this puts the money back into the community where the community benefits the most, so restoring traffic calming programs, after school programs for our youth, and those types of things. So really those are the three buckets that we're recommending spending the funds on. And as a reminder, these funds will be spent either via a budget amendment for 2021 and 2022. So that we would be looking for commitment on spending funds for 2021 and 2022. Future funding for 2023 and 2024. Again, this is just a plan that's suggested, but we would take formal action as the budget was drafted for the next biennial budget, and we'll be working on that early next year. At the last committee meeting, the committee wanted to just speak with the program leads to get, and so tonight we have Stacey Hansen to talk to you about the rental and utility assistance and how that program would go. We have Eric Speck, who will be talking about the small business assistance to small businesses, as well as the economic development plan. And then Naisha Fort Brooks will be here to speak to you on possibilities for the community connectors. There were a few additional requests for more information. I wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity to really hear from these three folks and have a good discussion. And so I thought that would round out tonight's meeting, and we could, the next meeting, bring some additional information. So hopefully we won't run out of time. So that kind of gives a high level summary. I don't think we had a particular order how we were going to ask people to speak. So if looking on my screen, if it's okay with you, if we could ask Ms. Hansen to speak first on the utility and rental assistance programs.
Good evening, Council. Stacey Hansen, Human Services for the City of Tukwila. So we've got a real opportunity here with our ARPA funds for the rent and utility assistance program that we provide here to residents who've been impacted by COVID. And One of the things that's really nice about these funds is that we don't have to spend them all right now. We can roll funds into subsequent years. And as we've seen in the news, we know that Delta variances are continuing to impact King County. And so our goal ultimately is to increase the maximum that we can provide to residents up to $5,000 who have that can show us that they have been impacted by COVID and continue to assist residents who maybe aren't impacted right now, but may be impacted later this year, may be impacted next year. So as this kind of mystery virus unfolds continuously in our community, we will have the resources available to us to make a deeper impact into households and help keep residents stable, because that, of course, is our first and foremost priority, is household stability. And what we're looking at is folks who come to us with more than $4,000 owing in back rent. We refer everybody off to the EPRAP program, of course, number one. And number two, if they owe more than that $4,000, our maximum right now, which is $2,400, isn't going to make a big enough dent into somebody who owes an $8,000 amount of back owing rent. And that fluctuates, those requests fluctuate every week. But we've seen some interesting trends that I wanted to share with you. And so far in 2021, 83% of the requests that we've had in Human Services have been for rent, which means that 17% are for utility assistance. And so far we've spent about $174,000 year to date with Human Services funding from all of our funding sources. And about 11% of that $174,000 has been in utility assistance, which is about $17,000. So a little more than that we've spent in utility assistance. And I know that that was a question for folks, and a concern is, how do we make sure that we keep folks' utilities on, which is absolutely critical, and we help with those big back owing rents. So one of the things, several things Rachel and I have been talking about over the course of learning about the ARPA funds, is using that $500,000 chunk of funds and basically allowing it to roll over year to year as we see folks who have received EPRAP funds, or people who haven't received EPRAP because they didn't get called, because there is a potential for that. We don't know if there's going to be a third round of EPRAP, so we have this little cachet of funds to assist our residents in 2022 and 2023, all the way up to 2024 as other funding sources dry up. So ultimately, our goal is obviously for stability and to get folks who have been notably impacted by revenue loss, basically wage loss, job loss, revenue loss, to get those folks restable again. And we know that a lot of folks are going back to work. And the folks that we work with in Human Services that are on the lower income range, they have not been fully restored back to work. We've got both parents and single adults who are working a couple of jobs to stabilize their household. And they might just be working two part-time jobs. In essence, they were working previously two full-time jobs. So we're still seeing a lot of, especially in the service industry, jobs that have not been fully restored. And so we know that those folks are going to need our support to remain in the community. It's going to take longer for them to stabilize and get their feet under them. And that's what we hope to use the ARPA funds for, is kind of the long haul. And I'm happy to answer any questions as we go, so please feel free to ask.
Thank you. I do have a few questions, but I'll yield to my colleagues first. Councilmember Hogarty?
No, I'm good so far. Thank you, Stacey.
Councilmember Dos Santos Johnson?
So you're going to be recommending increasing the cap from what it is now to 5,000. Do you think that's still sufficient, or do you think there are some cases where, you know, people need more assistance than that to become stable? And should we provide more flexibility? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a really good question. And when we talk about flexibility, we also need to keep in consideration equity and access and having a reserve for folks who find out about us through more non-traditional ways, and for folks who haven't had the opportunity to take advantage of EPRAP funds because they're not, it's not as publicly advertised, although we certainly, within the human services world, we certainly talk about that program a lot. I think it's important to have flexibility where we can, and also not to cut the pie slices too big so that we can assist folks, as many folks as possible.
And another question I have is, you know, I hear sometimes people saying things like people just don't want to go back to work. Like, and so they're just taking advantage of our systems right now and they're choosing not to work. And I know you hear from people and talk to people on a daily basis. What would you say is really the case of what people are experiencing who need this assistance?
What we're finding is it's people who are underemployed and they are working. They're trying to piecemeal positions together at different companies to get their basic needs met. And we know that folks are working very diligently, and they're also up against families with children, and they've got small children or school-age children, and they are or aren't in school, and parents working shift work and trying to manage that. So I think that the families that are taking the hardest hit have more barriers than the average family, that they make it through very complicated, they're very resilient, and they make it through very complicated circumstances. But this is much bigger than any of us ever could have even imagined and has impacted every single one of us. And it has definitely impacted our most, I don't want to say vulnerable because I just see so much incredible resiliency in our community, but those that are most financially vulnerable, it has impacted them so significantly. And we have to continue to remind folks about that.
Thank you. I don't have any further questions, but thank you so much, Stacey, for all that you and your team do.
Thank you.
So Stacey, one of the things I'm curious about is that someone comes to you and then they have, I don't know, more than 8,000 and you refer to them to the King County program. And do we keep track of how many people come to us and then we refer to them to that program?
And then well,
through after that.
I think anybody who has been impacted by COVID, we automatically refer. We automatically refer to the EPRAP program and explain the nuances, because it's confusing that even if you were helped last year, you can be helped again this year because it's a separate pot of funds. So just making sure that we explain to residents the nuances with the program and encourage them to apply. But we don't necessarily keep a list of folks who we referred to EPRAP. We have in the past, when folks have told us that they applied but they didn't get called on, we kept a list of those folks. And then earlier this year, the Riverton Park United Methodist Church had some leftover EPRAP funds that did not get spent. And because of our partnerships with the case management team up there, and particularly Tina, she asked if we had residents we could refer, and we were able to get folks who had not been served, we were able to get them served. So we do that as a backup, and we tell folks, we just don't know, so we like to be prepared, because if we do get asked, we want to be able to get our residents in line and get them served.
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out if there is a different range. If you owe X, Y, if it's $5,000 or $2,000 more that we can't support, we will try this program for you to go ahead and maybe see if you get served. Is that how we kind of have the process in right now? Okay.
That's exactly right.
Okay. The second question I wanted to ask is, you are, you know, you're interfacing with these folks, you're SME, and obviously, you know, you, is the $500,000 enough for, you know, amount of the total of, I think, whatever, 5.4 or 5.5, is that from the needs that you're seeing from our community? Do you justify, maybe justify is not the right word, but based on what you're seeing on the ground and, you know, the number of folks are coming in for utility and rental assistance, should we be increasing that more, or you think the $500,000 that's recommended is adequate? I just wanted to hear from straight from you.
I think it's adequate. And the reason I say that is because I know if we don't have a spending timeline that's really tight right now. Oh, pardon me. So we know that these funds roll over, and we have, you know, through the generosity of council's recommendation this year about COVID funds, we have other funds that we also tap into as needed, and we also have partners that we tap into as well. And so I always am reluctant to say it's enough, because we don't know what the future holds. But the reality is I really feel like that is a significant amount of funding. King County has done an amazing job identifying communities with great need, and so we're going to see a lot of our residents and a lot of our apartment complexes get folks completely wiped out with their debt, and or almost wiped out with their debt, and then we have funds. And so we can piecemeal a little bit extra, or we can let those funds continue rolling and address needs as they come up. And I feel like we're in a really good position to be able to do that with the
$500,000. Okay. I really appreciate that. I see, Cynthia, you have your hand up. Do you want to go ahead and ask a question?
I'll chime in and say that, you know, supportive of, obviously, of your perspective. You're the one doing the work every day. And I know from the Joint Recommendations Committee that there is a lot of money at the county level to support housing rental assistance. So my question is actually, how are community partners doing, the ones that we provide funding to? Are there opportunities to provide more assistance to those community organizations? Is there an opportunity to check back in with them, or for us, my computer, like what is it? Is there an opportunity for us to maybe ask them about needs? Because one thing that I've been noticing just about this work that we're doing in this committee is, since the funds don't need to be spent until 2024, there's a lot of opportunity for us to really go out into the community and identify those needs, rather than determining how all of the money is going to be spent in this moment, like, or at this time. at the beginning when we don't know how everything is going to be changing?
Well, we do check in regularly with our partners, whether we fund them or we don't fund them. And of course, we have the Human Services Advisory Board, who are really boots on the ground in the community folks. And we meet with them regularly and ask for recommendations and their input before we look at any kind of increase or just going to agencies outside of our process. So we really honor and respect that process. And the advisory board has some really unique expertise and background that helps us determine recommendations to administration, to city council, and it's based on what they're seeing in the community, based on what we, of course, see in human services within the community. So I really trust that process and know that if there were, as we continue into 2021 and we get our quarterly reports from nonprofits and we get referrals from our trusted partners, funded and unfunded, we do have those conversations, and we'll be having a quarterly provider meeting in September where we're going to talk very specifically about this to make sure that we don't have a gap somewhere that we are missing, because that's very important. And I will tell you, 100% of the time when we ask our partners and our advisory board, where are the gaps? What's the biggest need? We always know the biggest need is going to be housing and stability around housing, secondary utilities. And so, but we still ask the question because we need to make certain there's not gaps that we're missing.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So you mentioned year to date, I believe we've used about 170,000. Remind me what's the total out of that was, if you recall.
The total of that for utility?
Utility and rental assistance.
Okay. Well, for utility, so 174,000 is what we've spent so far this year. And that's all of the human services programs that we fund here at the city. 19,140 has been spent in utility assistance. So that means about $155,000 has been spent in rental assistance.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Councilmember Hogarty, any questions for Stacey? So we move. Okay, cool. All right. Appreciate you, Stacey Hampton.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate your support.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks.
So I did have a question or just a clarification Vicki Carlson, Director Carlson. So for the staff that's proposed under this, these are staff that were impacted due to COVID. These are not positions that were frozen prior to that we're now bringing them forward. Is that correct?
That is correct. These are all positions that were directly impacted because of COVID. Either through, basically most of them were through the Parks and Recreation because we had to close our programs down. And so all of our part-time positions were eliminated because of that. And so this is bringing those staff back to then re-bring those programs back in line. So it was Camp Tuck Woolley, so some summer programs, and then the after-school program. And then the street staff that's come back, those were also frozen positions that were directly affected by the pandemic. And they're coming back to help clean the parks, help clean the streets, just make it a better environment for everyone that walks the streets.
Okay. So just an earlier item, Tony Carlton, Deputy Finance Director, was talking about the second quarter. We saw that in general, things are really bouncing back. And when you look at the staff, you know, we project all the way to 2024, and we do have a budget that's coming out 2023 at the end of next year, probably going to start that. Is it wise to do that, and you know, or to wait until that happens and we just project this year and 2022? Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts around that.
Yeah, well, I think so. A couple of things. This will be a little bit of a long answer. Is I think it's good to have a plan in place. Again, nothing will be solidified except through a formal budget amendment for this year, next year, and then through the budget process for 23 and 24. But it's always good to have a plan in place that can we can adjust as we get new information or as our needs change. What we want to make sure we do is that we do spend the full $5.7 million. We don't want to leave that money on the table. And the other piece of it is with the changes that's going on with the pandemic, again, as our deputy finance director did report, when we put the budget together, we did figure that the impacts of the pandemic were going to continue. So it is a very conservative budget. But as we see some of our revenues start to come back, and particularly sales taxes now starting to trend above our budget, we're going to be updating our six-year plan. So you'll be able to see the full impact of all of these changes for 6 years, and then we'll see how ARPA fits into that full six-year plan.
So when is that happening?
We're starting to work on it now. Again, the sales tax increase is just the last couple months. So I think we've had 3 months where it's succeeded. So we're definitely 3 months is starting to be a trend. Although I will caution you, I did see in the paper, I think it was last week, that July sales tax in general was reduced, and it was because of the Delta variant. People didn't shop as much in July, so we might see a little dip.
Okay.
We're going to watch that very, very closely. We will be updating this, and it'll be part of the budget amendments that come forward later this year when we have a little bit more information on how 2021 is shaping up to end.
Okay. We need to have a plan, and that's part of the requirement that we need to allocate these funds.
Not a requirement. I think it's just good practice to have a plan. So we've got a roadmap to follow. And again, because nothing will be solidified for 23 and 24 until we get to the budget process, it gives us a roadmap, but it also gives us the ability to change if we need to, as new information comes available or priorities shift around on us. The only thing that really becomes critical, we really have to make a decision, is honestly for 2021, because that's the budget amendment that will be in front of us.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Finance Director Carlson. So are there any questions for anyone else? I think we have, I believe, Derek. Colleague, like, you know, Councilmember Hogarty or Councilmember Delsina-Chancellor, if there's any questions, please feel free. I just want to yield to you guys first and then ask my question. Go ahead, Councilmember Hogarty.
Yeah, so Derek's going to do the economic development plan and business assistance, right? So, yeah, I'm just a comment. I'm looking forward to hearing about that. That's my comment.
Yeah, Derek, so I think in the plan it shows 200,000. Just an overview of what that would be used for, and why you think that number is a good number. Maybe let's just start from there.
Sure. Yeah, thank you, Chair. So what's in the staff report, what I've recommended is, as Councilmember Dan said, $200,000 for small business support. And I'll come back and talk about that a little bit more. And then the other piece of it is $150,000 related to the economic development plan. And I can talk about that a little bit more too. So of the $200,000, I think it's really helpful to look at it really as a placeholder. And we don't have a lot of specifics that we think absolutely we are ready to move forward the contract under that money. It's really that we see a need for some small business assistance But we think it's like, as Stacy said, it's really good that we have a few years that this money can be spent through 2024. So we don't need to, you know, we like to leverage the money. And so we don't want to be spending money on something if there's another government agency or somebody else that's going to be providing that money. And there are other agencies looking at different programs right now. And but the placeholder for the $200,000 really would be targeted for small businesses. And one of the general needs that I think is still out there, Stacy mentioned trusted partners, a very popular, you know, term these days, is community navigators. And I've seen a need for that in the business community, particularly small businesses, particularly ones that don't have great English skills. And as an example, so the $200,000, I think it's likely we would want to use some of that money to contract with other community-based organizations that are trusted partners to help us promote to these small businesses what existing resources are already out there. For instance, there still is a federal loan program out there. The state just launched a new small business loan program called the Flex Fund. There also are tax credits that are still available that aren't loans, they're actual tax credits. But I think some of our businesses may not even realize, like as an example, let's say you're a small business and you can't really afford to have paid time off for your employees. But if you want your employees to go get tested or go get vaccinated, there are tax credits and other programs to provide funding for that. But it's complicated to understand that. So as an example, if we saw that as a need, we could put together a contract with an organization that would do a more like a promotional outreach program with small business to help them understand how that program works, to help them decide if they would want to, you know, use that type of a program. So that's the kind of activity that we might use within that $200,000. The navigator, though, there are other government agencies looking at doing this currently. So for instance, the U.S. Small Business Administration has a $100 million grant program right now across the United States. The applications already got turned in. So for our region, a bunch of cities got together and submitted an application under the One Redmond organization, but like a bunch of us would be, it would cover our region. And so if that group gets that funding, then we don't want to recreate that wheel, but my hunch is there will still be some gaps. There's always some little gaps when it gets down to what's your particular need. And so having some money to be a part of that or to fill the gaps, the Port of Seattle also sees a need for this trusted partner community navigator for small business, and the Seattle Metropolitan Chamber sees a need for that. And so they are working on a letter that they are going to be sending out to the cities sometime in the next few weeks, encouraging the cities to all put a little bit of money together on a per capita basis for this type of work in the region. And that would then blend with this SBA grant if we get it. And if we don't get the SBA grant, it would just be a standalone. So even so, I think we would have some need for that type of work. And then within the $200,000, there also, I think, could be a need for very small targeted other kinds of business assistance. I know the council, I think even this committee mentioned the interest of childcare. So we might be able to do something for, you know, you may remember last year we did a little baby $1,000 grant for childcare businesses. You know, we could do something like that, maybe even a little bit bigger. I know City of Kent is thinking about doing something for childcare businesses also. Maybe we would do a partnership somehow. Also, Brandon is managing a small $20,000 grant from the port this year for a program we call Digital Literacy with Businesses. And I think he's briefed the Planning and Community Development Committee about that. But basically, that would be helping a handful of businesses to start with. But if that program is successful this year, and if we see there's a real need to help some small businesses get better, you know, social media, better online to get customers, then we could use this $200,000 to expand a program like that. But again, it's a placeholder. You know, there may be other things, like Stacy said, that we don't know are coming down the pike. We may need to adjust in the next couple of years. So that's the $200,000. And then the $150,000 for the economic development plan is really three chunks. The first chunk is $50,000, is really just your basic standard economic development plan with basic outreach, online survey, hire consultant, share information, get input from people, but it's more of just the online survey kind of an approach. The next $50,000 is what I call enhanced outreach. That's where we contract with other community-based partners to help us really delve into the community, where you start having focus groups, we start going to where people are, gathering information, folks that maybe don't do an online survey, we get information other ways, and incorporating all of that. And then the third $50,000 is really about getting better contact information with our businesses. So as an example right now, you know, during the pandemic, we were trying to figure out, how do we help the small businesses? Well, one way was making sure they were aware of resources that were available. And so we literally were just would send an email out with information about, here's a federal loan program, here's a federal grant program. But that email only went to about 1,000 email addresses. We have over 2,000 businesses in the city. So we know we're missing businesses. And then even of the 1,000 businesses we emailed, we don't really know what their preferred language is for that business. And for emails to be successful, or social media, it needs to be fun, it needs to be brief. And so because we have so many different languages in Tukwila, it's not really practical, and people are going to read it if we have every email is translated in five languages and suddenly it's a 5-page long email. People just won't do it. But if we had the ability and we knew the preferred language for whoever's managing that business, so we could do a targeted piece to say, okay, here's a piece that's in Vietnamese or something, and we're getting it to the people we know prefer that language, we think we could get to those businesses a lot better with some of the programs that are out there. So that was that last piece of the economic development plan. That would be more of an ongoing benefit. I do want to mention, though, maintaining that database. So there's keeping up with businesses and the contact information. If we want to do it, I think it's important to know it's not just the $150,000 at one time and that lasts for the whole 10 years or something. Every year we would have to have some kind of a $5,000 or $10,000 or something to keep freshening up that database. Otherwise, it just becomes not very useful. But I'm happy to answer any questions or explain more why on anything.
No, thank you. I think did a really good job on overview of both items. Councilmember Hogarty.
I don't have any comments except for I like the idea of setting aside that $200,000 for the grants and other kinds of support. And even though it's not specific what it's going to be, we just place a hold on that money. And then, of course, the development plan's got a little bit more substance to it, and I support that as well.
Okay. Councilmember Delisternos Johnson.
I'm supportive of both of the requests, and I'm even supportive of the additions, the deeper dive, and you know, the building of a system that will allow us to better reach businesses. I feel like Derek and Brandon run a really tight, lean operation in the city just looking at what Tukwila is, we're full of businesses, full of small businesses. So it just seems like so much work for two people. So I would just be supportive of building up a plan to the best extent that we can with this one-time use funding to see how we could better support all of the businesses, big and small, that are in our city, because those are a source of jobs for our entire region. And they help keep our city afloat.
True. So Derek, each of these, both items show for under 2021, and we're in August now. I don't think you'd be doing this year, both of them, do you?
Correct. I think ideally what would happen is we would have the flexibility to spend it over between now and 2024 as so we can just be wise about how we spend it. I think we might want, it would be good to have some of that money available in 2021. So for instance, on the economic development plan, we are trying to clear the decks so we can start working on that plan again. It's possible we'll get to a point this year before the end of the calendar year. We might want to start spending a little bit of that money, but it wouldn't be the lion's share at all. You're right. And then on the $200,000, I think, yeah, if we could have some of that money available this year, there might be between now and the end of the year some specific programs we might want to put together some, here's a session in Vietnamese that we partner with the Chamber of Commerce, and it's all about just one topic, and maybe that's just a $5,000 contract. But we might be able to roll some of those things out this year. But we certainly, like you said, we wouldn't be spending all of it in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate it. I don't have any other questions.
We appreciate your support. Thank you.
So, council members, I think that, we can dive into and start talking amongst us about, how do we move forward and make recommendations. We can start doing that. We can go through each item and go through like that. But I did want to ask one more question to staff. Director Carlson or Mr. Klein. So these are what's in front of us, all that we have a few that you recommended. Were there any other programs or anything that got left out during your process that we should get a view on that? I would be interested in that if you're willing to share.
Sure, of course. So that's a fair question. And unfortunately not terribly easy to answer because as you probably can guess, we have unlimited needs in the city. And we have other departments that are not part of this plan for ARPA funding. We have other frozen positions throughout the city. This doesn't do anything to unfreeze positions in the police department. So the police department still has a number of positions frozen. It doesn't begin to address the fire department and what the long-term financial sustainability plan for that is. So again, there are unlimited needs, and it's difficult to really narrow down what are the high priorities. So as we were drafting this, these were we saw the highest priorities. Again, most of these are programs that directly benefit the community, were affected the most by the pandemic. A couple of these don't, score $150,000. That's directly assisting an agency that we are a co-owner with that cannot get to ARPA funds. And we'll have the director, Devin Schrum, come speak to the committee at a later date once they get a little bit more information before they come before you. But again, these were what we saw as the high priority, but it does not address all of the city's needs. And I also do want to remind you that we do have Naisha Fort Brooks standing by to talk to you about possibilities for community connectors.
Yes, please go ahead.
I'm not muted. Good evening, council members, staff, and guests. My name is Naisha Fort Brooks, Community Engagement Manager. And tonight I'm here to provide just a high-level update on the Community Connectors Program. For our guests who are joining us tonight, the Community Connectors Program was created by the city in partnership with two local nonprofit for organizations that saw a need for a civic academy for Tukwila's immigrant and refugee community. On September 20th, I will be providing a full update to the council as a whole. I've been convening with the Community Connectors Advisory Committee, known as CCAC, since April of this year. The Community Connectors Advisory Committee is a community-led advisory group that reflects Tukwila's diverse community that has a representative from youth, senior, and immigrant and refugee representatives. The community has expressed the need to continue the Community Connectors program and understands the importance how a civic engagement and understanding of why a civic academy is needed now more than ever. The city previously had to cut $35,000 from the Connectors program due to the pandemic. And the ask is for the committee of the whole and the council to either do a budget amendment or utilize the ARPA funds to restore the Community Connectors program. The objective is to have a kickoff next year with a goal of to an 8 to 9 month academy. That pretty much sums up what we've done this far. We are going to be meeting again next month for a 2-hour meeting to talk about what the curriculum will look like, which is going to be completely different from the past. And I'm really excited to present that to you all on September 20th. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them for you.
All right, thank you. So your ask is not part of the recommendation, is that correct? So that's an additional request from what's in front of us tonight.
Right, it's to restore the Connectors program from when it was previously cut. I think Vicki's going to chime in.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was not initially on the list of what we recommended for ARPA funds. Okay. But again, this is where flexibility comes in the plan. We can definitely add that in if the committee feels that this would be a high priority program to fund with ARPA funds.
Okay. Ms. Brooks, how much was the ask?
$35,000.
All right. Thank you. Any questions, comments, peers? Councilmember Hogarty?
Yeah, I just have a few comments, and that is that the Community Connectors was started a long time ago. I think it was when we did our long-range strategic plan for the city. And at that time, Community Connectors were basically people that we would go to help bring communities together and bring them to events and things like that. And so now it sounds to me like the Community Connected program is more of an educational vehicle for people in other communities to understand the civic, like city, civic, all the things, since it's a civic academy, all the things that go along with that. Naisha, is that what the Community Connectors would be doing, is an attending an academy to learn more about our city?
Yes, Councilmember Hogarty. One is to learn a little bit more about the city services and how advocacy can be intertwined with the connectors, particularly for newcomers who are new to the U.S. and don't understand the systems or how to advocate for themselves, how to do public speaking. Just getting a better understanding of what that looks like. And then secondly, understanding the importance of why our residents should join boards and commissions. What are the roles of boards and commissions? Another recommendation from our advisory group is how to run as an elected official. So really just giving them the tools that they need to better be a leader for their community, but also to continue that two-way communication piece from the past to bring people together, but also for these leaders to advocate for their community members when they come to meetings such as city council meetings or boards and commissions meetings, and understanding why they need to show up and be there and have a voice.
So there'll be the academy, and then I just want to be clear, because I often hear council members, including myself, say, well, let's have the Community Connectors help us out when it comes to, engage community engagement on a particular issue.
And I think maybe there was something that was the model that was being used was something maybe problematic, because what happened was the community connectors then changed to be a civic academy, and council members were still thinking that they were helping assist bring communities into like a certain event, or it's like, well, let's talk to the community connectors about that and have them, you know, bring their community in. But that isn't part of the expectation. Just so we know, I mean, I'm not like it should or shouldn't be. We just need to know what is, be clear about community connectors.
Sure. So in the past, and during my time when I was working for Global to Local, what ended up happening is that the connectors were becoming disposable leaders. They were only asked to be used to help take surveys. And so we know that many of our communities are survey burdened. And so we want to prevent that from happening again. It's more of a transactional relationship that was occurring. And so to make sure that we don't repeat that same mistake, we want to make it more of authentic relationship building, where we're taking the time and having the time to communicate with the leaders of the community, getting them to understand what is going on within the city, explaining to them why a certain process takes so long. In the past, we would come in and ask them all these questions, take the data, but never come back and explain to them why this process is the way it is. And they also felt like they were disposable leaders. They weren't being valued. And so that is one of the key themes that I'm hearing from the advisory group, is we really need to value the next leaders, part of this community connectors program, so that when they're out talking to residents or having conversations about things that are occurring in the city, they are considered valuable leaders, trusted leaders, and not disposable leaders that occurred before in the past. So it will be more like a civic academy, understanding the city services, understanding the boards and commissions, teaching our residents about advocacy, teaching our residents a little bit why it's important to show up to these meetings, to public hearings, because oftentimes they don't know how to navigate the systems. They don't know the big words and terminology, and it can be very overwhelming. And so we want to just make sure that our residents walk away with value and that they're getting what they need from the city to really do what they need to do to express their voice and share what's going on.
Thank you for that information. And I will probably ask this question again when we get to the committee of the whole, just so we all understand that. So I appreciate that information.
Thank you.
Councilmember Dulles General Johnson.
I'm supportive of the request. I think that empowerment piece is really important. It's the thing that links. Oftentimes it's the lack of understanding or just that you've never had opportunities to learn this area of civic engagement. And I like the idea of us really starting that, because, you know, we may not see right immediately the connections being made. I think we will, but I think as we grow the knowledge base and empower these community members who have been underrepresented in our commissions, and just making them feel more included and in the processes that we have, I think it'll be a lot bigger than what we can imagine. And so I appreciate this. It's different than what we've seen, but I think you spent a lot of time really thinking, how is this going to work, and working with the community to build this program. Bam. I just want to say, I think Kent tried to do something similar, and I hope ours is better.
So I think this is, I am really excited. And the reason why I'm really excited is you are leading this program. You have, as you indicated, worked on the previous program, and you know what worked and what didn't work. I was there. I watched the program from a distance. I know how it turned out. I know what kind of went around. And I am very supportive of it. One thing that I am curious is when we talk about, you know, the communities that are not connected, especially the immigrant refugees, or when English is your second language, it is very tough for those communities to participate or join boards or advocate unless there is something that really major thing that happened to that community. Other than that, it's very difficult. So I would really, there are definitely some things that are, some barriers that are out there, but would like to kind of, in this, as you go through this second phase, would like to get an insight on what some of those elements of, you know, if someone went to go through this academy and they finish, are they really bringing other people to, or are they going to continue to independently follow through what's happening holistically on, you know, the city? Unless something crazy happens, everyone shows up, but it is very tough for because there are other things. I am very fortunate because I have 9 to 4 or 8 to 3 job, and some of the times that I'm talking about a couple years ago, it's very hard that you need to come to the city hall and get a packet, or you don't know where the packet is, or how long was this issue gone. Now I think we made it a lot more easier for people. You don't have to come to city council meetings at your leisure. You can listen to these committees and council meetings. I'm really looking forward to this program, and thank you for again for leading it. And I'm excited for you because you're leading it, and looking forward to that. So I do have a question for Director Carlson. One of the things that we can use this ARPA funds that I'm curious is essential workers, premium pay for essential workers. I wanted, to explore what that would look like for our staff. Has that something that came to, while you're evaluating this, came into your way?
So that is actually not something we talked about. That would have to be something that would need to be bargained for with our labor partners. So I would need to reach out to our HR director to have that conversation and see what the possibility is. But we did not talk about that because, again, we have unlimited needs, and there's so many needs throughout the city. We tried to focus on the programs that would benefit the communities.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Councilmember.
Was that something that, because I saw other cities did that or start setting things up using the ARPA fund, was that only for the city employees, or was that, I'm trying to understand what exactly the hazard pay was?
I would have to go back and double check the language. I don't want to misspeak on that one. I believe it was for staff, so it would be our city employees, but I can certainly double check and see if that would be something that would be applied to essential workers outside of our city. But I believe it was internal. I'll double check.
Okay. Thank you. I think it'd be good to, either next time we meet quickly, we can talk about that, or you could follow up with an email, and then we can, amongst the council members, we can discuss that.
Of course.
So we got 20 minutes. Dear council members, so we can go through this and start, and then, or we can continue this discussion next time we meet. Shall we just dive into it? And not okay. All right. So our first one is Parks and Rec staff, total of 500 and 78,000. I think it starts 128,000, then it goes to 150 each. I think that looks fine to me. Is there anyone that doesn't think that we should move that recommendation, that line item? I just want to go through line item needs. That's okay with y'all. Okay. All right, second one is also staff. I think that looks fine. Okay. Score is 150,000. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, council member.
Well, I'm going to steal Vicky's thunder because I called her about these items earlier and just said, what's up with a few of them? And she said, we're going to be getting a presentation. In fact, did you say that tonight too? We'll get a presentation. Okay, so Steve, yeah.
So, okay, we'll
pay that. That'll be coming at a later date. CORE wants to do a little more work to fully identify what their needs are and why needs are there, and then they'll be coming with to provide that information directly. But it's probably going to, it'd be nice to set that aside as a placeholder, but they probably wouldn't be making a formal request for a few more months.
Okay. The next one is business assistance. We had Derek talk about that. It's a total of 200,000. He talked about, I don't want to repeat, but I think he talked about like in different four ways to use that. Those 200,000. I believe the highlights were we can definitely do some grants, small grants that previously done, and then some business assistance in different forms. Does that look okay? I would personally like to see more in that area. I don't know, but how do you guys feel?
I don't know that I'm willing to commit to numbers because, I mean, it's a pie, right? We're going to have to kind of take around. But so just like in general, we support this, and I don't think we have time to get into that part of it. But I'd say duly noted that you think that even more could be put into that fund.
Yeah, okay. So in overall, we have two options. Either we can not recommend and push this up to the whole council and have that discussion, right? Or we can go through it and then recommend something and then bring it up. I know that we don't have enough time. That's why I was just kind of going through what we can tonight and then pick it up from next time. Okay. So I'll go to the next one. Oh. Go ahead, Councilmember Hogarty.
So are you okay with just saying yes to business assistance, and then in the next meeting you can say, and I think this could even be up. Does that work for you?
Yeah, well, I personally think because of the overview that we got tonight, we can definitely put something there. And I'll leave up to that, Director Carlson and Derek Speck to talk and figure out what that might look like. I could throw a number. I don't know if that would be helpful, but I would definitely advocate and you know, we'll talk more about if we don't put something in there. I don't think 200,000 that's shown now is adequate enough. Next one is utility and rental assistance. There's a total of 500,000 that it's flexible, can be used up and down until 2024. I think knowing what's happening around the region, that's a good number. And you know, as we heard from Stacy, I think that should be that amount. Any thoughts? Next one is after school program. I think there's a total of, yep, okay, cool. Traffic calming. I think that's 1.6 each year. That's 400,000. council member, I'll go first with council member Delestino Johnson and then council member Holberg.
I would like a presentation on this one. I still feel like it's a little high, and I know we're restoring a program that we had before, and this is about restoring, especially, you know, public-facing things that assist our community. I'm just not sure if this is the appropriate use of the ARPA funds. But, you know, I think the Transportation Infrastructure Committee might have had a presentation. I don't know how to pair that up. Maybe it's a presentation that we get as part of this one when we make recommendations for COW and hold off on our recommendation until we get that presentation. But I leave it up to staff in terms of what the timing is. But that's just my thought. I personally am not comfortable in making a recommendation on that without the presentation on it.
Thank you, Council Member Delestino Johnson, Council Member Kathy Holgerty.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with leaving it in, and that is because as we speak in transportation and infrastructure, it's in that committee being presented right now, and I get the agendas. So I looked at it, and the staff has recommended 10 top projects, and they include Cascade View Elementary School Safety Improvements, Tukwila Elementary School Safety Improvements, McAdam Road Speed and Safety Improvements, and that's what kids walk along. The Tukwila Community Center Pedestrian Crossing, which is, you know, where along with, and then the top one is the Allentown Neighborhood Speed and Safety Study. I think these three things are really important, and this whole program got held up because of COVID. We were going along with it, and then COVID came along and it just stopped. So based on this memo, I would say I definitely want to take a look at it. And the reason that it's so much money is because infrastructure is expensive, right? And so I say, yeah, sure, I would like to keep that there as a placeholder and then hear the presentation. I'm not sure if it'll come to our committee, but I did specifically look that up before this meeting, because I wanted to say, okay, so what does that mean? And then I was told by staff to look at the memo, so I did. And it looks good to me. So that's my.
All right. So I'll make sure that we end in 2 minutes. So we basically have like 10 minutes from next meeting. I too think that we should definitely get someone from Public Works to come talk to this committee. I don't think we should fund the 1.6. I think we should fund partial and figure out what that looks like. So I'll say that, just don't want to get into it in more detail, but there's a lot more I would like to say about this. Director Carlson, I think if next time you put that request that we want to talk to someone from Public Works to kind of, I think we got the packet. I reviewed and I didn't review it. I skimmed through it. I'll just say that from what Laurel has sent us. I'll look through it more. And I think it looks like there might be additional information that Councilmember Hogan is talking about now. I don't think funding 1.6 is the best use for the funds in a nutshell. Are there any other additional comments before we close, before we adjourn? Okay, cool. Thank you, Director Carlson, and thank you to the rest of the staff that joined us tonight. We really appreciate you. And talk to you all soon. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.